Hey guys, welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate, coming to you Sunday evening after a shellacking in Milwaukee to begin a three-game road trip. The Pelicans lost 135-110. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 50 points on 20 of 26 shooting. He had 13 rebounds in only 30 minutes on the floor. Adam, how you doing over there?
I'm doing swell. I didn't think anything was coming of this game. So what the hell? I'm doing just fine.
The Pelicans have lost 8 games in a row. They have dropped down to 8th place in the Western Conference. They are officially in play-in tournament territory. The good news is they're only 2.5 games out of 3rd place. The bad news is they're only 2.5 games out of 13th place. That's how the Western Conference is right now. 4 through 13, I mean, it's basically just like a clump of horses, and they're all shoulder to shoulder, basically, and any one of them could pull ahead here, you know, with like more than a third of the season to go.
I feel like Nostradamus, with a few weeks ago, looked at the damn schedule, Zion gets hurt, look at the schedule, and I'm like, 500 balls, great. 6 wins is a must. Anything worse, and it's going to look real bad, because it's just it's a terrible, terrible stretch. It's a bad, bad place to be missing guys, and you're missing dudes, and guys are getting hurt. And it's a shit show, man. But hey, Kyra played. Herb made threes. I mean, everything's looking up.
Yeah, we could talk about some of the silver lining stuff, including Kyra. I definitely want to spend a little time on him at the end. I want to talk a little bit about Giannis, though. I mean, I think he's one of my favorite NBA players ever. I think just I love his story, you know, basically being a kid on the streets in Greece, like just selling swag to like make a living for his family. Coming over here, you know, everybody thought it was hilarious when he said as a rookie, like, yeah, I want to be the best player in the NBA, the smoothie stuff. And here he is. I think he is the best player in the NBA, 2-time MVP, won a championship in a small market, still goes out in late January when he has nothing to prove and kicks teams like the severely injured, depleted Pelicans' asses. I mean, I just love his competitive fire. I love that he brings it every single night. I love what he represents. And I was having this debate with somebody in a text. What do you consider, or how many players do you consider in the NBA can truly carry a team? And I was going back and forth with this person, and here are my parameters. My parameters are a player who can drag a team to a top 8 seed surrounded by league average talent. I made a list after this game. This is not very scientific, but I want to run this by you. It is 11 players, and I want to see what you said. Mm-hmm. Of course, Giannis Antetokounmpo is on there. Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, Kevin Durant, Jimmy Butler, Nikola Jokic, Kawhi Leonard,
say it. There we go.
Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Damian Lillard, and LeBron James.
I mean, Luka and Jokic, we've watched it for years now. Like their rosters are terrible or get hurt, and then they still produce. Once upon a time, the reposed of the soul of the former starter Russell Westbrook. Back in the day, he used to be able to do it.
Yep, he could. Yeah, I guess I mean the present day version of him.
Yeah. Sure. I was just giving an honorable mention shout out to the former self of Russell Westbrook, because back in the day, like that's OKC, after they lost all the assets, that was his MO, is he was dragging them there. All those names. I mean, I think we've seen a lot of them do it. I think I would debate a few on like, could they do it? Because we haven't actually seen them do it. Like, it's hard for me to say, like, Jason Tatum's an incredible two-way player. Like I never imagined he'd be this good on defense. So I have to imagine it's true, but he's had a career running mate, Jaylen Brown, who is an also all-star that makes them one of the wildest wing duos to deal with in the NBA. So like, there's no such thing as a team for him where he's dragging anything. Whereas like Jokic, he does this. Luka does this. James Harden in the past, not anymore, but used to do this.
Totally.
Embiid, that's an interesting one too, because like he, you know, when he had help, I'm trying to think like back a little bit. I mean, I guess he didn't have an incredible, you know, Ben Simmons was kind of on the decline, and Embiid was doing a lot of the weightlifting there. So I buy it. Butler, we've seen it. Butler just saves his best stuff for the biggest games and then comes out and turns into a top 10 player for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in the playoffs. I'm trying to think of if I have anybody that I would debate. Like, honestly, I think my biggest debate would be current LeBron, because him by himself without AD has yielded pretty terrible results at this point. And I mean, it makes sense. He's pretty old. I know that there are stats that everybody are celebrating about like his scoring and everything. He has switched to a style of basketball in the last few years that has been very, let me get these threes up early and often, get these points easy and get out of here. It hasn't exactly contributed directly to winning. Like, he hasn't dragged those rosters necessarily post bubble, let's say. That one's a little, I don't know, a little iffy. I'm trying to think who else you just said, because I feel like there should have been more debatable on there if you said 11 of them.
I mean, Kawhi in his present state, just because he load manages his way through a season, maybe.
Yeah, he might play 30 games, 35 games. But like, look at this. He walks, he goes out, he comes back, and now he looks incredible again. So maybe he can. I mean, I can't say Dame can do it anymore, because look at, I mean, they have some decent players there. They just have a roster that doesn't make sense, and they're kind of in between a rebuild. Yeah. Well, you know, let me say it. Let me go ahead and say it, because I think he's almost there. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's almost there.
So I had my two toughest omissions. Shai was on that list. He was one of the two, and my other was Ja Morant.
See, Ja's so weird to me, because he's clearly an incredible player, and his team is a very well-constructed team that can play their system with or without him, and they just go win. Like, the people they have more trouble replacing are like Steven Adams and Bane. They get enough from Tyus when Ja's out that you don't feel him gone. And so, like, I struggle with it with him, but like, I know he's incredible.
Yeah, Shai, I mean, their Grizzlies roster is so good. Like, they're
it's built perfectly front to back, with the exception of maybe Dylan Brooks, because, you know, maybe you like him, but Desmond, if Bane's not playing, then it's the Dylan Brooks 15 shots I'm gonna make three show. Gotta love that guy flopping and. You know, elbowing guys and chicken winging dudes and kicking guys. And
I think the other tough one too was like, Zion has the talent to be that guy. It's just,
yeah, he can do it.
A games played versus games missed thing. But like, I mean, Zion this year in the 20 games before he went down with the hammy was stupid. Just ridiculous.
I don't think we even had the correct appreciation for how much lifting he was doing until now. Like, watching what's happening with the team now, watching what happened with the team once he goes out and it's only CJ and JV. It's clear that he was throwing some real accelerant on the fire.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely a lot to that. But I also go back and forth. Like, I thought at the very beginning of the season, like, I thought he was bad on the defensive end for, first 10 or 15 games.
He was.
And then a switch was flipped and he was just like, oh, he's a dominant two-way player now. This is what I've been waiting to see. But I felt like early in the season, I mean, the complimentary pieces were just playing way better. And I mean, there's just way more confidence there. And I don't, I mean, just the stretch has negatively impacted everybody. I mean, no one can make a shot right now. And mm-hmm. you know, Zion's creation ability obviously has a large part of that, but it's just like, I don't know, you lose a couple in a row and all of a sudden it's like, you're someone different now. Like, that's what it feels like.
That's the tough part for me is like, I'm not moving with any of the, like, the prognostications about what these losses mean. All they mean to me is that this many consecutive sucks. And it, yeah. like, there's an air of depression around the team from taking on so many losses, getting beat up like this. Like, it sucks. Your emotions are down. Confidence is down. That's never going to help a team. I don't really take anything else out of it. You know, I'm not super upset or anything. This was always going to be the hard part of the schedule. Did I count on us being in a situation where we were going to, like, rest two stars on a back-to-back and, you know, and lose this game. Yeah, we could have lost this game with everybody healthy. I mean, it's the Milwaukee Bucks and you're flying to Milwaukee the night after a game to, you know, to go play against Giannis. You could lose that with your full roster. And, you know, the role players did their damnedest to put up, you know, a little bit of a fight, but there's just not enough scoring power out there. There's not enough size to deal with a team that big. And they're so well schooled in how they play that, like, it's autopilot when they go play. This isn't like a thing where guys are missing assignments and throwing balls to weird spots and whatnot. Like, they know exactly what they run and they don't mess it up. It's a lot of interchangeable pieces and they're just looking to, like, improve that eighth guy. Like, every year, that's their mission is, like, can I make my seventh or eighth player better? Which is just a really cool place to be for them. I would like to be there one day. It seems fun. It seems really nice.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I mean, one thing about them is, like, you know, Giannis is basically a metronome, right? I mean, you're kind of counting on, like, 75 games from him every year. You're counting on him to be, like, a culture driver of that team in terms of, we're going to play hard every night because I'm probably the best player in the world and I'm going to play hard every single night. Like, how can the other guys take a night off when he's acting like that? I mean, he had 30 points in the paint in this game. It was 30. Look, I mean, he does this to a lot of teams, but the Pelicans, I think, are, especially in their weakened state, are especially susceptible to this. They do, like, a decent job of preventing shots at the rim, but when dudes actually get there, they clean up. If you look at cleaning the glass right now, Pelicans are dead last in opponents' field goal percentage at the rim by a pretty significant margin. They're like 71.8, and the next closest team is 70%. So it's like almost 2 percentage points. Look, I am a known Jonas Valanciunas appreciator. I like what he brings. I liked a lot of the small ball stuff they did with Larry at the beginning of the season, but rim protection is a clear weakness on this team. I don't even know if they have to address it at the trade deadline or anything like that. Like, I think they could just go out and get a wing who has some creation ability, some shooting, and that would help them certainly. But yeah, big weakness. And we saw Giannis. Oh man, he exploited it a little bit for sure.
I was looking at the chart today, rim protection percentage. So it's like effective field goal percentage of guys at the rim against the given player. And, like, right at the line where the measurement goes negative, just above it is Jonas and five spots below it is Larry. And everybody else's, like, starting center is above them. We're in a bad spot when it comes to protecting the rim. We've talked about this before. We do a good job of denying the rim attempt. That's the part where we have some success. It's not defense at the rim. Once they're there, they're making it, plain and simple. And, you know, on a night where it looks like we were probably, like, I wonder if Jonas didn't know coming into the game, like, oh, the other guys are out. Like, I'm probably only going to play 20 minutes. Three rebounds, three. Trace. 1, 2, 3 from that guy.
What did you think about his flagrant 2 Saturday? Because I think we knew what the result of this game was going to be. Like, the Washington one was the one that was like, look, they need to win this game.
The game.
They're about to go on this very difficult three-game road trip. Like, they needed to win, beat Washington at home, and they didn't. And JV getting ejected with the flagrant two, Bo to Taj Gibson's head, you know, kind of questionable call. I mean, that was really the key play in a game. They really needed to win to end this freaking streak.
Yeah, I mean, JV getting thrown out of the game ruins the game. You know, the clear mission of that game based on the rosters that you see there is, like, it's going to be a JV clinic. And now I have no ability to rebound, no size to throw at them, and nobody to work in the post. So great. Now they're gonna. And, you know, you would expect that with him out, they're not going to rebound, and we couldn't. And they had a million second chance points. I think it was like 30. It was like 29 or 30 points. You know, everyone's favorite backup center, Daniel Gafford, put on a clinic of shot blocking and rebounding and putbacks. That was just disgusting. I mean, I think the JV call, like, you want to call it an F1, sure. I can't call it an F2 when Taj Gibson is crouched over with his head, like, at JV's hip. JV does that same clear out move every single game. Sometimes he gets a foul called when he does it. Normally that elbow is going in somebody's ribs.
Yeah. He's just trying to hook around his body.
Taj Gibson's bent over. He didn't drill him in the head. And they're like, oh, top body contact, above the shoulders. Yeah. Above the shoulders, because his shoulders are below JV's waist. Like, I don't know.
He's trying to sniff his armpit. That's why the elbow made contact with the head.
I don't know what the hell, when I watched it happen in real time, I was like, well, we're going to need to get that screen cap for a future podcast post, because JV's face when he found that he got tossed was chef's kiss. They told him at first, he's like, just like waiting here, like, oh, they're going to give me an F1. And then he's just looking at the guy and he goes, I'm out. And he's I'm out. His face is incredible, but it ruined the game. It absolutely ruined the game. The most frustrating thing for me, though, from the game was that, like, clearly there is a rebound discrepancy when he goes out, right? That's going to be a problem. We had a lot of trouble making shots, as per usual. We fought back, had a little bit of, like, had clawed back into it, brought it to six, had the ability to bring it down to three, or bring it down to, it might have been four. When they called a foul against Jose, like a personal foul on Jose, then it gets overturned on review. Then after that, like, it's just a sequence of backbreaking. Sorry, Pelicans, you got close, no cigar. It's one thing after another. Like, B.I. loses the ball in the lane, gets penetration, drops the ball, just coordination, off goes the ball. The horrific Bradley Beal sell job when B.I. comes behind the back, swings an arm over the top, doesn't touch him, and Beal throws himself backwards and gets two shots, like, one thing after another. Then when Jose didn't get that, those free throws, when it got overturned, they came back down and they hit a three. And, like, it was just one thing after the other. But the thing that killed me, you have a rebounding discrepancy. You know that's going to be a problem. It is a problem for three quarters. Then magically, for 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, the team rebounded really hard. Like, Larry, Herb, B.I., everybody started hounding guys and throwing their bodies around to try and get rebounds, and they did. And it pissed me off more than anything else, because you had the ability to try to do that prior to that moment. And for 5 minutes, you could. For the rest of the game, you barely tried. And it just, like, it was so visual that them getting those rebounds actually just made me angry, because none of that was happening. You were not seeing, like, B.I., Trey, they were throwing themselves into guys, even if it wasn't for them to get the rebound. It was to, like, cause chaos to make sure someone else could. And that's what you were going to need to do when you have, like, a leaping 6'10 Daniel Gafford hopping around grabbing everything, and you've got nobody over 6'10 that can compete with that. And it just, for a moment, they had it. And then, like, where was that the rest of the game? Anyway, really disappointing game, like, heartbreaking game to watch. JV not playing was tough. You know, Brandon, it started off looking like Brandon was going to have a heater and go for 40. And then, like, after making his first few shots, he just missed a boatload and then hit some more later on. And he just ends up with, like, a really inefficient night. Just a tough, tough, tough game all the way around.
I think one of the things I've most been disappointed by with Brandon this year is, like, part of me feels like, did he come away from last year thinking, I have accomplished a lot? And don't get me wrong, he definitely accomplished some stuff. Like, he showed on a national playoff stage, like, I am, like, in the, like, I can be in the conversation for, like, all NBA. Like, he was incredible in those playing tournament games, that first round series against the Suns. Like, he showed he can be a stud in the playoffs, like one of those guys. And I'm just wondering, did he come away contented after that? Because it was good, but also it was the first round of the playoffs. I mean, what really have you done? You know, you've like, let's just look at it. He's never been on a team that's finished with the winning record. And I'm not putting that on him. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know,
it's like a team six sport. Coaches.
Yeah, it's a team sport. But this is clearly, like, the most talented roster he's ever been a part of. He has a head coach he likes, who gets him, who trusts him. And I don't know, it just didn't feel like he came back, like, hungrier than ever, you know? Like, it feels like Jason Tatum came back and he's like, man, I'm pissed I lost in the finals. Like, I just want to kill everybody this year. And I don't feel like Brandon came back the same way.
I don't know how to judge that from the fan perspective. I don't have anything, you know, from inside really to judge, like, the subjective nature of his return. For me right now, like, all I see is a dude that's rusty, that's trying to get to the same spots he's always gotten to. And it's just like a little bit of hesitancy, a little bit of forcing shots to just, like, see him go down to try and work himself back into like how he's typically played. I think my struggle is the fact that he missed a third of the year, you know, and it's really like, that's really all I have. Like, I definitely have questions about that. And about how long he missed relative to, like, anybody else we've ever heard with a toe injury that wasn't a tear or a break. So I guess I could imply, you know, some hunger because, you know, we don't have any evidence that he could not come back sooner than now. I think we have enough evidence to say that he could have come back sooner than now should he have decided to. And he, you know, his foot looked fine running. That certainly hasn't looked like that's been the limiter. Anyway,
I think he's going to be fine. I mean, look, it's only been two games. He didn't play for 2 months. Like, it's too early to form any sweeping judgments on, like, what player he's going to be the rest of the season. Like, I tend to think he's going to be fine. I need to give it a little bit more time. This story is just so difficult to talk about. Cause it's like, look, there's one person who knows what Brandon is feeling in his foot, and it's Brandon Ingram. And when he says he's feeling some discomfort, like, I believe him. Like, I don't think he's not feeling no pain, but at the same time, like, I'll just tell you, like, there was frustration from many different people at many different levels of that Pelicans organization, including in the locker room too. And it's like, well, how do you weigh those two things? I know I've talked about this story and people are probably tired of me talking about it. So I'm not going to talk about it.
It's a defining characteristic of the season for the Pelicans. You know, like, we wouldn't be talking about them being in eighth place right now if he doesn't miss that many games. Like, might be talking about them running away with first place if he's playing in those games, which who'd have ever thought? But we got there for a minute with Zion without him. So, you know, who knows what it could have been. And there didn't seem to be any, like, real urgency around that. There's, you know, if it was this terrible thing that could not be played through, we would have heard that diagnosis and or that timetable, and we did not. And like sometimes in the NBA, the like indisputable reporting, like the words that are chosen, sometimes that's where the whole story is. And sometimes it's what isn't said. We got past the point in time where he's saying he's coming back on a road trip, and then that whole road trip goes by and he didn't play. And like that, I think that's where it turned for me, is like, you go tell Cassidy Hubbard you're going to come back on the road trip, and then like not even a glimpse, like not a practice or anything. You weren't even ramping up to it. You weren't close. That just wasn't happening. That was the tough one to swallow for me, because like, why say it? Why even say it if you weren't sure? If you're so unsure and if you're in so much pain and all that, why would you say that? And unfortunately, like, we just got like a week of a tease, and then it was still like, you know, I started calling it DEFCON levels because I didn't know how the hell to judge when he come back. But anyway, we can let it go. But there's no apologies for talking about it, because it's the defining characteristic of the season in terms of what the heights of the record could be versus what it is.
Yeah, and I'll just say this too, like, part of, you know, what I try to do is just parse information and what's real and what's BS. And I'll just say this, like, the amount of people you heard it from and the way they were saying it from so many different people really led me to believe that this frustration was a real thing in many different sectors, not just one or two people. It was many different people were feeling this and just going, 29 in a row, toe contusion. So just leave it at that. Let's talk a little bit about Kyrie Lewis Jr. Came off the bench tonight in Milwaukee, scored 15 points, went 7-11 from the field, showed off that burst. It's the kind of burst we like. It's not the bursts that we hate that are associated with the Pelicans. Willie Green said after the game that, you know, minutes for Kyrie, consistent minutes, are something he's going to at least have to think about. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to him getting the Devontae Graham minutes. I'll just say that. But it was a nice performance, and I know this didn't really have stakes, but what did you think?
I mean, I think this is something that the fan base has been clamoring for. I think we all missed him and have been like hoping that there's still something there. You know, he's a draft pick that was regarded as a steal. A lot of people like had him as like the, you know, the post draft, like, who's the biggest sleeper that was selected, and his name came up a ton. Like, he was a guy people liked, came into the league really young, has a really unfortunate injury right after it seems like he's turned a corner in terms of like really starting to put together how to play consistently on an NBA floor. Like, he feels like he's becoming a rotation player, and then boom, there goes his knee. And he's done everything right, and he's a good guy. So like, yeah, you're rooting for him. He comes out there and he does the things that you remember. He's fast. His hands are fast. His feet are fast. He can get out in a transition really, really quickly. You know,
it always makes me laugh when Antonio Daniels goes meep meep. I always laugh when he says that on the broadcast.
It's you know, he still looks like who he was. And I think that the toughest part for people is like, you know, Devontae Graham's probably had the best defensive season he's ever had. The guards in general for the Pelicans have been much better on defense than I think anybody would have expected. And yet, Devontae Graham's offensive minutes, right play Tay or not, have been harmful. You know, we've gotten to the point where, much like Herb, defenses don't care that Devontae is shooting the three anymore. Like, he's not getting the gravity that I could at least defend him that way offensively before. And as a selection for the lineup, that, you know, guys were coming out and defending him past the 3-point line. That's not happening anymore. So if it's not happening, then, you know, all bets are off to me. Try and figure out what else you have. And you do have something in Kyra, which I'm saying correctly, Kyra, DeJounte, Kyra.
You got it.
He looked good, you know? He did everything you asked of him. He's taken everything like a champ. I know that, you know, there's plenty of development staff there that loves him. I know he's like Teresa's kid.
Do you know how old he is?
Is he 19, 20?
Well, he was 19 when he came into the league. He's 21 now. He doesn't turn 22 in April. It's just one of those things that's like, he's been like, this is his third year. He's already gone through a lot, right? He's been through a major injury. He's rehabbed from it. He's still got the quickness. And it's like, this dude's 21 years old, you know? Like, my feeling is that I think he's going to be a player in the NBA. I don't know whether it'll be here or somewhere else. I mean, like, Jose seems kind of entrenched as the backup point guard. Maybe they could play together. I don't know. This was just one game, but I really do think he's going to be something. Like, I think he's a nice player, you know? Like, Ish Smith has had a very long career, and like, I think he could be kind of a better version of Ish Smith. Like, that's where like the low end is for me.
Yeah, I was about to say, I hope you say the low end, because if you don't, I'm going to be mad at you, because he does have an elite trait. He has an elite NBA trait. His speed is top of the league fast, and he can handle the ball while moving that fast. There's only a handful of guys that can do that.
Good passer itself. On the move, too. We saw it a little bit tonight, but like that's one of the skills he's got, is like, you know, you break it down off the dribble and like throw some darts while he's on the move.
Yeah. And that, like, being able to utilize that speed, it's like it's the reason that De'Aaron Fox turned out to be more than what we imagined him to be coming out of Kentucky. Like, there was more there because there was an elite skill that hadn't really been explored. And once you made him your primary guard and put him on ball all the time, you're like, oh, the speed isn't just speed. Like, he can play faster than everyone else, and he can do things with it. You know, and now they have the devastating left-handed combo of him and Sabonis in Sacramento lighting the beam on a nightly basis. I didn't realize, like, they had an awesome breakdown the other day on ESPN where they, Jalen Rose and friends set up a play with Sabonis and Fox, and Sabonis and Fox showed them a couple of their play calls. I never realized how much it must suck to defend those plays from two lefties when everyone else you play against is right hand dominant, and you rarely get two left hand players in those pick and roll situations. It's got to screw with everybody's brain in the NBA when you're dealing with those two. And it just,
and bigs who are skilled ball handlers and good finishers at the rim, like, if the DHO game is very difficult to stop. Like, we've seen this with Jokic, right? Like, Jokic is like DHO, like, Sabonis kind of does a lot of that. Like, you can run all this DHO action. It's very tricky. It's very difficult to stop.
Anyway, back to Kyra. Looked great. Has elite speed. Still has elite speed coming off the ACL, which obviously means he handled that rehab very well, which is, you know, it's another good sign. Like, you're going to get hurt in the NBA. He recovered well. I really want to see him, you know, I want to see him get minutes. I'd like to see him play. I didn't have the misgivings that some people had before now. I don't think the Pelicans have an easy ability to just throw guys out there. This is not a team, a bottom of the NBA developmental team. This is a team with expectations and stars. So it's hard to say, like, oh yeah, guy at end of bench, here's 20 minutes, because you have a thing that works and you're supposed to try to win every night. The idea that you're going to like give experimental minutes on a nightly basis, that's not a thing for teams like ours. So this came about naturally. Now he's been able to show it. The same thing happened for Dyson. A natural opportunity arose. He stepped into that opportunity and was successful. And what happened? Willie rewarded him. Willie started to count on him. This is a door that's opened that maybe gets Willie, you know, Willie said it himself. He clearly saw something and now he has to consider it. This is how Willie works. He has now seen a pile of evidence that says, I got to give this guy time, which means I got to take it away from somebody else. We've talked about this before, trying to be like the diplomat, let the play on the floor decide who plays where. I think he got a little bit more information tonight. And, you know, maybe this gets us a little further down the road on improving that top 10 or 11 players.
All right, Adam, predict when the Pelicans' next win comes on the schedule.
So what the hell's our schedule again?
At Denver on Tuesday, at Dallas on Thursday, at home against the Lakers on Saturday, at home against the Kings on Sunday, at home against the Atlanta Hawks on February 7th. 2 days before the trade deadline, by the way, they play the Hawks.
Yeah, the Hawks was like my when Zion got hurt, the Hawks was my, if everything goes well, this is like the earliest I could see Zion coming back, was that Hawks game. That was my little rough estimate. I think it'd probably be like the game or so after that, if possible. But that was like the first game. I was like, if everything was perfect. You know, I probably shouldn't say this, but I really want to say that Lakers game just because, and LeBron's like right here at the Kareem record. He's right there. Like he is on pace to break it in that game. If he doesn't sit one of these games, he is on pace to break it during that game. I don't know if they'll do some weird thing where he sits so that he can break it at home. I don't know. They get weird with stuff like that. Like they may want to do it at the crypt.
There's been a lot of good memories for LeBron there over the years, so I understand why.
Yeah. I'll say the Lakers game. I don't expect us to beat good teams. I imagine Brandon will be a little bit more gassed up. We'll at least be semi-healthy. We won't have Zion yet, but we should have most of the rest of the roster. And we just kind of owe the Lakers. I'll take the Lakers game as our first win, which is upsetting because it's not the next game or the next game.
Okay. That's fine.
Tough times.
I'm not even going to try to make a prediction.
Well, then why the hell did you make me make one?
Man.
Yeah. See, now welcome to how I felt 30 seconds ago.
You know what?
Which one of these?
I don't think I don't think they're going to win Tuesday. I think they're going to beat Luka on the road. Why? I have no reason to think that, but I'm just going with it because I want to see a win. Luka has absolutely flame broiled them.
They owe him one.
Dallas has been a real house of horrors. I was in the house for that 46-point loss a couple of years ago. But yeah, why not? Why not?
They just owe him one. Yeah.
Irrationality. Yeah. So that's what I'm going to go with.
I'm the one using like losing records and like pushing out far enough. I'm like trying to weigh it scientifically. And this guy's just like, Dallas because.
I don't know.
We just owe him.
Do you think the Pelicans Lakers games, like, do you think there's going to be like an incredible amount of juice in those, like there were last year? Do you expect it to have the same feel?
I dare say the game that might wake us back up may be the Lakers because of what the end of last year was, because LeBron is going to be trying to take an all-time title during that time period, because of all the history with our team being built off the back of Lakers picks and both Lakers draft picks that materialized and future draft picks. I think there is still so much there. And I can only hope that that the Lakers sole refereeing conspiracy continues in New Orleans when they play us. Like clearly they have the worst referees in the league. Everybody just calls everything against the Lakers and only them, according to LeBron, nobody else gets bad calls. Only them. He doesn't see it happen to anybody else. His words, not mine. Even though statistically he has the best referees in the entire NBA.
He just put up an Instagram post apparently like 40 minutes ago, 24 hours after the fact of, this was a foul. It's like, okay. His tantrum. I mean, it was deserved, but it was hilarious. I mean,
it was the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and I laughed my ass off.
I laughed so hard.
I laughed. Have you seen the split screen of it and Little Miss Sunshine?
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, there's an incredible tweet. It's literally the tantrum from Little Miss Sunshine. I've reposted it with because he fell to his knees and then like got exasperated, like he couldn't breathe. I reposted a GIF of James Brown when he's like collapses after the performance and they come throw a jacket over his back and like, oh, help him up, help him up. I just, that was laughable. Absolutely laughable. And the only thing that could be more laughable is that the official referee account comes over and bends over publicly and says they're going to lose sleep and feel terrible about this because we blew the call. We're so sorry, LeBron. Us poor referees weren't good enough. We weren't up to the moment. We're never going to be able to live this down, and we're so sorry. What a horrific, horrific look. A literal, I hope he sees this tweet from the official NBA referee account. What? What are we doing? Like, just dirty, 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 disgusting stuff.
That was embarrassing. Okay.
It's just terrible.
We've dragged this out long enough. Adam, thank you so much for staying up with me on Sunday. I am going to go watch The Last of Us, first two episodes of Ripped, and we're very much looking forward to episode three.
Yep, I started episode three, and then we cut it off. It was time to put the dude to bed. So, you know, the Pels keep sucking. We may need to turn this into a Last of Us recap pod. We may not have a choice.
We're pivoting to talking about HBO shows.
What could we do? Hey, look, everybody else has done it. Why not us? Why not us?
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll be right back.